Welcome to the From Survivor to Thriver podcast. I'm Mark Fernandes. Each week, along with my co-host Eric DeRosa, we aim to shatter the stigma around mental health conversations through kitchen table conversations with real and relatable people, all the while reminding our audience that they are not alone. There is hope, there is help, and there is a way through. Enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Survivor to Thriver, episode 157. This is one of your co-hosts, Mark Fernandes, sitting in my usual seat along the mildly and painfully spring-like Brush Creek today, I will say. But it was a gorgeous Colorado day, and I'm super excited to chat with my wonderful co-host, Eric DeRosa, and our guest today. Eric, how are we doing?
I'm good. I'm doing really well. It was a beautiful bluebird Colorado day. I did not get out to ski. I was out all day yesterday in what can only be described as some really delicious and yummy powder. And I know you were out a couple days before that as well and had probably your first winter day of the season. So it feels like winter came. It's left for a few days and it's coming back in force, I know, this weekend, which we're all excited about. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. We just had my brother-in-law, mother-in-law, two nieces and nephew here. I took my two nieces on their first double blacks and they crushed. My nephew did the scoop jump off Walsh's and landed it mostly. I threw him down a bunch of shit his mom would be mad at me for, and that's my job. And it was phenomenal. I honestly, you know, I've gotten to ski with three of my nephews and two of my nieces this year. And I know you understand, and I'm not sure how many other people do, but, you know, not having my own kids, spending a time, I literally said it to my nephew yesterday. I was like, how does it feel being with Uncle Mark in his element? And he looked at me and he goes, it's how I picture you. And it was so sweet for him to say that. And wow. It was honestly so gratifying. And my brother-in-law and I definitely had a couple of pride moments of like, we did this. We got little badass skiers now. And they're going to pass us soon. They're going to. It'll happen. And I can't wait to see it.
It's how it's supposed to be. And the passing of the torch. And I'm slightly older, so it'll happen for me a little bit sooner than it'll happen for you.
It may not, only because my guys have been out so much more. I mean, my nephew hiked the bowl last year and is landing 360s in the park pretty consistently now. So he's pretty close to me already. And he has nowhere near the skill, but he's got giant cojones. Even if they haven't dropped yet.
Enough of us. We're going to have a topic tonight that we have not talked about on our show before. It's hard to believe. It's been a little over 3 years, but a super important topic. And I'm really excited for us to meet today's guest, because joining us today is Anne Bell. She's here to remind women that their needs matter, that they deserve an enjoyable, nourishing sex life, and that there is a deep connection between menopause and mental health. Her journey into this field began in 1998 as a massage therapist, where she discovered the need, the deep need, I should say, for addressing mental, emotional, and relationship health in people's lives. Clients found solace in confiding in her during their sessions, and in 2012, Anne made the decision to formalize her commitment to their overall wellness. In 2020, she furthered her expertise by obtaining certifications in relationships, sex, and love coaching. With that, to talk about all things menopause and mental health, let's welcome in from across the country in our old state of New York, Mark, our good friend, Anne. Hi, Anne.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Super excited to have you on.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. And when you reached out to me a few months ago with this whole topic to talk about the impact of menopause on mental health and the stages, the different stages of menopause. I know you and I started to have a conversation that we could have even recorded at the time. And I thought, wow, so much of our audience base is female. This is a topic which is not discussed, as you and I said, as much as it should be. You also had your own journey, which we're going to get into, and kind of discovered it the hard way for yourself. So here we are tonight in the next 50 minutes or so, having the opportunity to really shed some light on that linkage between menopause, perimenopause, postmenopause, mental health. And as you said, this idea, we're going to shatter this stigma around women thinking that they're losing their minds, because there really is some brain altering chemistry and function that goes on around menopause. So with that, I'm going to let you take it from here.
Thanks. It is so true. We think of perimenopause. Perimenopause can start as early as 35. If it's not been induced surgically or some medical condition. But normally it'll start at 35, and most women don't know that. It'll last anywhere from 7 to 12 years. And then you go into menopause. Menopause is 12 months without your menstrual cycle. And menopause is really only one day. One day afterwards, it's menopause. Then you're postmenopausal. It's the funniest thing. But
so it's so interesting to me because I feel like when we think about mental health, like so often teenagers and especially like men in their early 20s, that's when those things show up. And we know this, but people ignore it. Here, there is something that is like categorically defined and known medically. Mm-hmm. And there's such an ignorance to it. So I guess maybe we should start with, so you're a 35 to 45 year old woman. Mm-hmm. What are the things you should be looking for or be aware of as it pertains to perimenopause?
There is so many symptoms. We just think of it as hot flashes, night sweats, but the number biggest symptom is cognitive functioning. You think you're literally losing your mind. And actually, because we are losing our estrogen in our body, that's actually what's happening. You feel like you're losing your mind because we have so many estrogen receptors in our bodies that basically estrogen is what keeps us our juices flowing. So for men, their sex hormones do not decline. They stay the same. Women, we hit this age and we're losing our ovary functioning. And that's what's happening to our body. And our sex hormones are becoming nil to nothing. And what happens is a plethora of symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, which are the really common ones, headaches, migraines, oh my God, the vertigo, muscular skeletal pain. And 80% of women will have that. 25%, it will be debilitating for them.
Well, and I guess what are some of the more hidden stuff? Like everything you just mentioned are things that like I know, and I'm an ignorant dude. So what are some of the sort of signs or things that people should be a little aware of and be like, no, I'm not going crazy. This could be
high blood pressure, diabetes, your cholesterol, high cholesterol, your lipids will go up. And everybody thinks, and I had this experience myself when my cholesterol went up, weight gain. Oh my God, the weight gain. When my cholesterol went up, the first thing my doctor said, I'm going to put you on a statin. I said to her, I'm not going on a statin. And she says, well, then you're going to have to go to the cardiologist and get a, I says, okay, I'm going. So I go to the cardiologist. He says, runs the test. And he said to me, it's going to depend on your calcium score. Otherwise, if your calcium score is high, then that's hereditary. You're going to have to go on statins. Okay. Go through all the tests. My calcium score is zero. He says to me, my cholesterol is 230. He says, I don't need to see you again, ever. Unless you have a problem. I'm not concerned about it. I don't need to see you. Because this is what happens. They want to put you on statins for women. Statins don't work for women in general. Statins work great for men. It's hormone replacement therapy is the number one. And if you have, is the number one thing that women need. If you have the cognitive dysfunction, the memory loss, the overwhelming feelings of depression and anxiety, it's hormone replacement therapy is the number one treatment. They want to give you antidepressants. 15% of women that are perimenopause and menopause are on hormone replacement therapy. That is terrible. So many women are suffering. And because menopause is so stigmatized, you just have to deal with it. There's nothing we can do. It's the phase of life you're in. It's literally fucking bullshit. I am infuriated because what happened is in 2002, the Women's Health Initiative study came out and it was misinterpreted. And they studied very unhealthy elderly women and they were on different hormone replacement therapy at the time. And you have a slight risk for breast cancer on that hormone replacement therapy, slight risk. But they misinterpreted, the New York Times ran with it. Hormone therapy, replacement therapy causes breast cancer. We were done in for 20 plus years. The whole boomer generation, I'm a later boomer, thank God. I'm boomer Gen X. But I watch my older sisters suffer because they have not been treated properly. And there's a resurgence now happening because the Gen X doctors, there's a lot of them that I follow. All that I say is information coming from doctors. I'm not making it up. All my information comes from doctors. So now there's a resurgence trying to re-educate women not to be afraid of hormone replacement therapy. And then you'll hear someone, well, I want to do it naturally. I'm like, oh my fucking God. Hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone are in male and female bodies. It is natural to replace hormones that you're missing in your body with estrogen, with progesterone. It drives me nuts when women say that. But here's the other benefit, the long-term benefits of being on HRT. 30% risk decrease in 30 to 50% in heart disease. 30% decrease in dementia. 30% decrease in breast cancer and 30% in all-cause mortality. 30% decrease in colon cancer. Being on hormone replacement therapy is nourishing for your body. I'm 62 and my changes started at 47. I didn't really notice big, big changes. I kind of like breezed through until I turned 61. 5 years, I had a late menopause. I 5 years postmenopausal and the shit hit the fan. All last year, I had postmenopausal bleeding, which is not good at all, which can lead to cervical cancer. So you have to get on that. So I was checked out for all of that and it was all negative. And then what happened is I started to really become depressed. I don't know what happened to myself. I'm like, where did I go? What happened to me? And then I was diagnosed with a blood clotting disorder in June, a hereditary blood clotting disorder. Now, before that, I was like, I'm going to get on hormone replacement therapy. All the research I've been doing is I want to be on this. Then the blood clotting disorder, and I'm like, I'm never going to get on HRT. I have blood clots now. And I had to fight really hard. And then I followed these doctors again and they had studies. If you have a blood clotting disorder, you can be on HRT. You have to be on the patch, not the pill, because the patch will not increase your blood clotting disorder any more than it already is. And I said to myself, oh my God, I'm going to get on this. But I had to go through three gynecologists before I found the one that would actually write the script. And my hematologist, he said, no. I said, well, reach out. Would you talk to my gynecologist? He says, no need. I made my decision. I says, well, how did you make your decision? He says, oh, on a website. I says, well, do you have studies you can show me? I walk in with studies for him that I can have HRT. He won't even read them. This is 3 months him and I are doing this dance. And finally he says to me, no, I don't approve of it. I says, why? He says to me, because of your age and your weight. I said, okay, my age, it's appropriate. It's usually within, these are general guidelines, 10 years within your menopause or under 60. And I was within 10 years of my menopause. And he says, your weight. I says, well, I can do something about my weight. I said, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyways. And he says to me, well, look, you know, when you call me from the hospital because you had a blood clot, you'll know why. And I'm like, go fuck yourself. I mean, how dare you? How dare you?
Do you think it's just sexism?
I think it's doctors being uneducated. They've not had to deal with HRT for 20 years. This study came out and crushed women, set us back many years. So doctors have not had to keep up date. They hold on to this study, which, by the way, has been debunked. The last time that it was disproven was 2020, the last piece of information. So, but they won't go against the current guidelines because on the prescriptions themselves, they have black box warnings, basically, all these side effects. And the FDA, like for vaginal estrogen, the FDA will not change. Their doctors are petitioning and showing them studies. You have to take this off vaginal estrogen because it doesn't cause any of these side effects, and they just won't do it. So women.
So the education is lagging behind the actual science.
Lagging. So I said to my hematologist, I'm going to do it anyways. He makes that terrible comment to me. And I said to myself, you and I are done. There's too many doctors on the face of this earth that I have to put up with this nonsense. So I went back to my gynecologist. She said to me, I'm sorry, this is not shared decision making. I'm sorry this is happening to you. This is not supposed to be how it is. I will write you the script. I said, great, because I said to her, if I'm going to make spontaneous clots in my body for no reason, I'm going to die happy doing it. And I started HRT, and within 2 weeks, it was unbelievable the difference. I've been on it now 6 months, and I feel so much better.
So, Anne, as you were, it is kind of humorous. So, yeah, we can laugh at it. There's been a whole bunch of gremlins in the system here on February 29th as we record this. So, Anne, as you were saying, 20 years. And when we think about 20 years is, in fact, a generation. Mm-hmm. And so what we're having is a whole generation of new doctors coming up who have never really even had this topic of menopause and HRT on their plate. We have other generations of doctors who within that 20 years were told HRT is a no-no, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's not even go down the road to discussing it. Let's not even go down the road to discussing or understanding menopause. So with that in mind, how do we change that?
It is rapidly changing. The New York Times just had an article about menopause, actually. It was really a good article. So the doctors are really promoting. There are companies online. Like I had to go to a company online to get my hormone replacement therapy because the doctors that I went to would not write it. So there, you have to look for a menopause specialist. A doctor that has been trained in menopause. And there are many out there, but you have to go. Like I said, I went through 3 gynecologists before I found mine. And it was self-pay. I had to self-pay for the first 2 cycles. And then I found a new gynecologist. And I said to her, okay, I'm on HRT. I have a blood clotting disorder. And my hematologist, I had to find a new hematologist. Here's a funny story. My new hematologist was an old white dude. And I said to myself, oh boy, this isn't going to go well. And he was so cool. He was like, he read my studies. He went through the whole thing. We talked about my weight. And he's like, I approve of you being on HRT. And I'm like, doc, you want to be my doctor? And he goes, yeah, for this, I'll be your doctor. Because I said to him, doctor, if my body's going to make spontaneous blood clots, I'm going to die happy doing it. And he said to me, that's all I need to know from that statement, what kind of patient you are. I said, great. Now let's get on with this. So he knows. And when I went to this new gynecologist, she didn't want to write it. Because I said to her, look, I want to have this under my insurance. I don't want to have to pay. And she was very hesitant, but every roadblock she had, I came back with answers. I came with studies. I came with facts. And she says, well, how long do you want to be on HRT? And I said to her, as long as the benefits outweigh the risks, the rest of my life. Oh, we're going to have a conversation every year. I said, we can have it. We can have it.
Go ahead and book that shit now, lady. Book it now. Well, the thing that strikes me so much is so many of our mental health conversations when it comes to either medication or treatment is how often either yourself or a person close to you has to be your advocate. They have to mm-hmm. be the person pushing the envelope, being like, no, this is what I need. And it just, I don't know. It breaks my heart, but in some ways it's sort of heartening that I'm like, okay, here's something that's straight up like biologically proven chemical, the whole bit. And we're still having the same reaction. It's not a good thing. I'm not saying that, but at least I'm like, all right, well, we're growing in a lot of different
ways. Women's healthcare is how we are still treated like we're men. Our studies are based off of men. They forget that we're not men. And the studies are very limited for women. Actually, I don't think it was till 1970 something that women were even in studies. That was like the first studies women were in. So that's the first problem, is we don't have enough studies for women when it comes to all of this. And women's pain and suffering is way tolerated. There's such bias. If men had to go through what we were going through, none of this would be happening, because you guys would be demanding pain medication. My last gynecologist, I had to go for, because I had postmenopausal bleeding, we have to go for a biopsy, and she's down there doing her thing, and I'm like ready. She gave me a Percocet. Now, I've had biopsies before, and they weren't as bad as this one. She's in there doing something else. And I said to her, you better hurry and get the fuck out of there, because we're just about done. This is terrible. I feel like I'm going to pass out. And she says to me, I'm almost done. I says, get out of there now. And you know what this doctor said to me? I got rid of her too. She comes up to me and says, well, and I have no children. And she says to me, now you know what it's like to have a baby. And I said to her, what the fuck?
Well, and that's the thing. And I want to be clear. When female. I said sexism earlier, I want to be clear. Like, when I say sexism, it doesn't just mean men. Like, there's a certain level of like acceptance, yes, or this
tolerance.
Is how it is.
Tolerance.
And I just, it's sickening. And I think about how many women there are in the medical profession now, and I'm like, how is this not changing faster? Why? Like, I mean, look, the nursing profession, I don't know, but I'm guessing it's what, 70-75% female? Mm-hmm. And the doctor profession, I'm sure it's not to 50-50 yet, but it's getting closer all the time. And I'm like, how is that even possible? How is that happening? It's unfathomable.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing I'm learning is, boy, do doctors not like when you come in with studies and you know what you're talking about, and you tell them no. Oof. They do not like that. It's amazing to me where I'm coming in and giving you facts, and they're like, no.
You know, there's a couple of pieces there. The first is, Mark and I, we've had in-depth conversations with both of our wives around the dinner table at the same time, around these very topics. And I can tell you, there has never been a time where my wife has gone in for a gynecological exam and come home and said, I just felt like I went through childbirth. Like, it's unfathomable. And it's a reason why more women, I would think, are hesitant to even want to go, right, see their doctor for these kind of issues. And as you were talking about advocacy work for yourself and seeing multiple doctors, it really started to resonate with me in terms of, in the mental health space specifically, we always talk about there's the right doctor for the right person. Yes. And there are so many instances where people will start to see a therapist and there won't be a connection, or something just isn't working out, and people just decide, well, it must be me, right? And they give up. Mm-hmm. And so here's another example. And the two are so interwoven as well. So I can only imagine how many women are going into seeing doctors and they're being told, right, this is bad for you. There's nothing wrong.
This is the way it is.
This is the way it is.
You can't do anything about it. I can't tell you how that burns me.
And I'm curious on the other side of it, and we can kind of go down this road because it's now sparked me thinking. I'm wondering how many women may be going to see therapists. Mm-hmm. And you alluded to this earlier, and I did some reading over the past couple of days. So I have my own little study, so to speak. But I'm wondering how many women are going to therapists and are presenting with anxiety. They're mm-hmm. presenting with depression. The question probably doesn't even come up of, are you perimenopausal? Are you menopausal? And then they're being prescribed, as you said, antidepressants, which, as I read, antidepressants can often have the opposite effect on women who are menopausal. So I'm going to let you take it from here.
Antidepressants have their place. But when it comes to perimenopause and your menopause, the number one prescription that needs to be written is hormone replacement therapy. That's the first course of treatment. You might need to balance it out with antidepressants. That's what my doctor says. Well, I'm going to put you on Wellbutrin. I'm like, no, you're not. And I'm sitting there crying and I'm hysterical. I want hormone replacement therapy. I said, I feel like the estrogen has left my body. She says to me, well, it is. And I said to her, but there's a solution. There's a solution here, not antidepressants. And I felt 5 months into this, I feel like myself again. I feel like who I was all along. So what I would tell women is you have to be persistent. Please do not give up. I have a free menopause resource guide on my website where you can start the process on educating yourself. You have to educate yourself. You have to know every menopause is different. Menopause is normal. 15% of women will have no problem. They'll sail through it. But it doesn't mean the other 85% aren't suffering and have other problems. We have to make allowances for the others that are experiencing it and get treatment. And it's not just hormone replacement therapy, because sleep is a huge issue. It's hormone replacement therapy. It's exercise, nutrition, sleep, supplements. Those are the five. This is the age now where we have to clean up our acts. How we used to lose weight is not how we're going to lose weight now, because now we're going to gain it. And it's visceral fat around the stomach. Subcutaneous fat is different than visceral. You can have a perfectly healthy woman and she's got a lot of visceral fat around her stomach and it's bad. So you have to lose it differently. So you have to change your nutrition around how we do these things. So there are five or more components to this, but HRT is the replacement of all the estrogen that you're losing out of your body. And also testosterone. Some women have to go on testosterone, but because it's basically considered a male hormone, for when women get on it, they have to take 1/10 of what men have to take, because we don't want beards and more hair. And so they have to start. Testosterone is, they're starting to study it, how it's more than just your libido, more than just your sex drive. So there's other components for testosterone besides that. So it's so been understudied, but thank God that this generation, it's the Gen Xers that are pushing it. They're not suffering. We boomers just sat and took it. The Gen Xers are like, fuck this. We're not suffering. What are you, nuts? What's going on here?
And it's interesting to me, because I was just reflecting on the idea of like how people think about or talk about estrogen versus testosterone, where like women essentially create estrogen at the same rate for much longer. Men's testosterone does start to decrease at 18, but it never goes away, right? Like it's just a slow decline. And there's ads. I literally get a junk text a week trying to sell me some testosterone drug or thing. And it's like, if we're aware of, and I think it actually speaks to what you said earlier, Anne, about like the ideas of studies on men and male subjects versus female, because like we see this and we're like, all right, so beyond libido, men and women, when you take testosterone, you build muscle mass differently. There's all these other effects. And it's like, okay, so we know that that helps, right? So why would we be talking about this any differently than an athlete taking HGH, which is essentially just a different hormone? So when we think about our mindset around those kinds of things, right? People take supplements all the time. Like, I think I'm not going to out anyone, but like you go into a friend's bathroom and there's literally like 9 brown bottles, right? And I'm guilty of this too. I take a multivitamin, I take a magnesium supplement that helps me sleep, all these other things. Why is it that you think we can't look at a hormone that our body naturally creates with the same idea of looking towards benefit versus all the other things? Why do you think we think of it that way?
I think because of this study that came out. I don't know. I don't know why women are so understudied and just pushed to the side when it comes to their health. If you guys, when you walk in and you say to your doctor, I have a low sex drive, I have a low energy rate, let's test your testosterone level. Oh, we're going to give you here's your script and you can be on it the rest of your life. I'm getting questioned, how long are you going to be on this? Because typically it's to age 65, then they want you off of it. And I'm like, no.
Well, because, and to me, I'm like, all right, then where are these studies, right? So,
they're out there. Swedish women they're on it into their 80s or 90s. There's a study out there. Great. There's women in this country, but it's limited. It's very limited. I have clients that are in their 80s and they had to come off of them in their mid 60s. And they say to me, the worst mistake I ever made. I wish I had stayed on them. Overnight, when you come off hormone replacement therapy, all your symptoms are coming back. I'm like, who wants that nightmare again? I'm not doing that.
Well, and I hear that and I'm like, okay, there should absolutely be. So if it is medically proven or makes sense that at some point women should come off it, I'm like, all right, then there should be some sort of a reasonable step down. Like there's ways to do that. Like, you can't just turn off the tap. Like, I don't care what it is. Like, look, if someone has spent their whole life trying to kill themselves with drinking or drugs, you don't just stop it. Because that can kill them. So why would we do it that way? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. It doesn't, and if you can elaborate further, Anne, it doesn't sound like there is a way to step it down.
No. Right? In fact, every woman's going to be like, I'm on the low dose of it all. Yeah. And it just took the edge off for me. It was just enough. Some women might need more. Plus, they might need testosterone. It just depends on the levels of what's happening. But I'm fighting for the long-term benefits, not only for now. I want, when I'm 80, my hip fractures. Oh, that's the other thing. 30% decrease in hip fractures. I mean, who doesn't want that? I mean, who... It makes no sense to me that we're arguing over a natural hormone that's in our body that's been decreased. And why wouldn't you put it back in your body so that you can, and it has nothing to do with looking younger, it has to do everything with feeling better, mentally, physically, emotionally. And yeah, I'll take the physical. I don't mind. I'm a hot chick. I don't mind looking a little hotter.
I don't mind. Well, and especially when you look at it from a point of view of it's something the body naturally creates. Everything you've cited essentially says it eliminates more health problems than it can even come close to contributing to. Mm-hmm. It is the things like that that convince me that the world makes no sense.
Yes. Well, I think it just got all lumped into it. In fact, like in my mother's day, they would say, I'm going through the change. It was a secret. I'm going through the change. I'm like, what's this change? What's happening? And that's what I say to women. I says, this is no longer your mother's menopause. It's no longer that you have to sit and suffer. There is relief out there for you.
Well, and take any of the things you've brought up in the singular, and you're like, we don't want anyone suffering through that. And then I hear your story, and I know many others that unfortunately echo it, and it's a list. It's not one or two of these things.
No.
It's all of them, or most of them. And it makes no sense to me that we wouldn't use what is so easily just sitting there for us. Of like, oh, this makes them feel better. So in working with clients and having dealt with doctors, what are some of the ways that you've been able to find, because obviously even the science sometimes hasn't helped you. What are some of the ways that you found to like positively impact people you work with or other healthcare professionals to kind of open their eyes and come around to how this can help people better?
Well, first, from my own experience, I had to get educated. I'm like, what's happening? What's going on with my body? I didn't have any resources before I could start going to doctors when all of it was coming down, blood clotting disorder, postmenopausal bleeding. I'm like, what is going on here? So I really dove deep into the science, the doctors that were talking about it. And you have to be your own advocate. And even if you go in with studies, don't be discouraged. There are plenty of doctors that when it may take you a few, but there are doctors that will listen to you. But you have to stay strong. We shouldn't have to do this, but you have to do it. And I think because like my philosophy now is I'm going to have the doc. If I'm in the system, I'm now in the medical system. I've not ever been in the medical system, but I'm in it. So if I'm in it, I'm going to find doctors that are like me. I'm going to find doctors that are willing to listen and they're open-minded and they will tell me the facts and we can have shared decision-making. That's what I want. And you're going to have to go. The first doctor might not be it for you. So don't be discouraged. Just keep going because you will find your doctors. You got to find a menopause specialist. I have those. It's Ishwish is the one group and the other one. Oh, my God, it's escaping me. But I have that where you can find menopause. Oh, the menopause. I think they just changed their name. The Menopause Society, where they certify doctors and you can find a doctor in your area that is a menopause specialist. And you start there. If your own gynecologist or even urologist will write, if you can't go where you can go to get your needs met, but don't be discouraged and just know it's part of the process because there's a lack of education, a lack of understanding. And what else I learned from my doctor is that every facility has guidelines that they follow, which I didn't know, to tell you the honest truth. So when I was talking to my new gynecologist and we were talking about how long, and she says, well, the practice here has guidelines. And I'm like, really? She says, I have to follow guidelines. I'm like, really? So I said, okay, you'll do for now. I'm sure she won't be lasting because I'm going to be 63 this year. So by the time I see her next year, she's going to harp on age. And I'm not harping on age. I'm harping on as long as I physically feel good, we're going to continue. And I will find doctors that will do that for me because that's my choice.
So I'm curious, have you, and I'm going to, we'll call it small M menopause, right? For the whole, well, to encapsulate the umbrella, knowing full well there are the three pieces. So in your menopausal journey now, do you actually spend time sitting down and talking with other doctors about the importance of education around this very topic, besides just, you know, talking with your clients? But have you really had a chance now from your own lived experience to be able to sit down and ask doctors that question as to, is this something that is starting to be taught? Is this something that needs more education?
Well, not specifically with my doctors per se or surrounding doctors. I've not had that chance. But what the doctors that I do follow, this is their number one thing, is the one doctor is a gynecologist. And she says, we receive 12 hours of training in school on menopause. And she says it has to start with schooling. So doctors are well aware that there's no training per se around this.
And I just saw Mark's reaction when you said 12 hours. It's
unfathomable to me, especially when you think about it's like, I honestly can't even think of an equal of like, oh, men go through blah, 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 and every man will go through this in some form, right? There isn't an equal, so to speak, in that. And I'm like, so woman is going to go through this. And even a gynecologist spends, by the way, 12 classroom hours. That means 3 half days.
Yeah. No,
that's not a right. And honestly, I'm getting personally angry about it because my wife and I are both 47. There is an MD book that she's been trying to get through because it's terrible, talking about perimenopause, that was given to her by a dear friend of ours that is a little bit older and has already gone through that. And I'm just like, it's unfathomable to me that it's just, and I'm somebody who's had, you know, different medical issues throughout my life that I've dealt with. And it's like, the first thing you do is try to understand it, get better about it. And it's like, okay, so we're not even doing that for our medical professionals. Great. That's perfect. Yeah. No, I wonder why people are struggling with this.
And that's why you have to find a menopause specialist, because they've been trained. Their society that they belong to have the most current updated guidelines. So they're well informed.
It reminds me so much of in the therapy field, where if I think of my own journey, I was seeing what I would call kind of a general therapist back in New York a couple of decades ago. And now there's OCD specialists, anxiety specialists, PTSD specialists, which was extremely helpful for me. And that was really what unlocked everything for me, was being able to understand that trauma was at the forefront of all of these symptoms that I was presenting. And it sounds like here we're talking about the exact same thing.
Yeah, I've seen too many. I've been just hearing the parallels the whole time. And while you were talking about it, I jumped on just to Google, and is what you're talking about NAMS, the North American Menopause Society?
There we go.
It showed right up. It's a national organization. It's multidisciplinary, nonprofit. So you will have endocrinologists, gynecologists, all kind of under that umbrella. I didn't go too deep the website, but for our listeners out there, immediately a bunch of stuff popped up. And if you're suffering from this, please get in there and go to bat for yourself, because it doesn't look like anyone else will.
And I'm writing that down as you speak, Mark. We're going to put that in the show notes.
Please do. Please do. Because
And again, it's all in that free menopause resource guide I have.
Well, and I
have it all.
I was using that as a bridge to, as we're getting ready to wrap up here, I want to make sure people know how to find you, how you'd like to be found. And let's make sure they can find that resource guide and anything else you think would be important to share with our listeners. We'll put everything in the show notes as well, but just in case somebody's just listening and they can retain it that way, let's go ahead and let them know.
My website is aconfidentialconversation.com. And I have a lot of stuff there. The free menopause guide, there's a free Love Your Libido book. There's a free love assessment that you can take. And I also made a couple sensual massage video course. Let's get sensual, mind-blowing massage techniques. And and it includes the vulva and the penis. And that's really a cool video. So you'll learn how to give and receive a full body massage, including the vulva and the penis. And there's a manual. I made a massage manual to go with it. So whatever type of learner you are, it's all there. So it's really, really a cool course. And I've taught this in public. I kind of married my two careers. When I taught it in public to the public, I would watch couples transform before my eyes. It always amazed me. This course would really just bond couples on such a different level without talking. They use their hands. Of course, I didn't teach the penis and the vulva in public, but I added that part in from my sex coaching.
I love that. It's so, you know, I'm as you're talking through this, I'm sitting thinking of times Amy and I have gone and done traditional couples massage. And my wife and I, as our audience knows, we're two very different people in some respects. I get on that massage table and I'm sound asleep and snoring within 5 minutes. Amy is thinking, she'll usually tell me afterwards, how long is this going to last? So I am the kind of like bougie massage lover in the family. But I love this idea.
It's amazing.
Taking it to the next level.
Phenomenal. I do because, you know, here's the thing. With the penis massage, I find it's very interesting. The men, you guys, during sex, you're busy. You want to do, you want to give. You don't really sometimes just relax. And sometimes women don't know their man's penis. So this is a good way for everybody to enjoy, where the woman can really just start massaging the penis and the area and the balls, and you guys just to get to relax and enjoy it. It's an interesting. And now here we have the vulva and the vagina, where women have had
way more complicated, way more complicated.
Yes, because we have muscles in all of these areas. So for women, it is complicated because they could have been sexually assaulted. They could have been penetrated way before they were ready. And it happens so frequently because everybody's gung-ho. Sexual assault, birth trauma. So they hold a lot of tension. And this is really cool on helping your partner to relax, to enjoy. And to you, when you really slow it down and go through the process that I'll guide you through, you'll really help her muscles relax, believe it or not. So it's really a cool concept.
That's awesome. And also, so all of your sex coaching and all this other stuff is listed on your website as well.
Yes, it's all there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, look, it's one of those things where I feel like we're finally coming to the point where all of these things are actually being spoken about and are being embraced. As they should have always been.
They're trying to get embraced. People are still hesitant. I'm out there talking about it, and some of them still cringe. But it's getting better.
Well, I hope you noticed that both of the men sitting here were not cringing. There was a lot of smiling and nodding.
You guys are cool.
We get it. We understand it.
I've actually studied massage, so I. And funny note, as we get ready to wrap up here, but I had to think of it right away. Eric talking about he and Amy's response to massage being different. My Amy and I have only ever had one couple's massage, and we can never have one again because I make a lot of noise and talk. And she's literally like, I'm too fucking distracted. I can't relax. You're over there like, again. No, harder. Put that elbow right in there. And she's like, all I want to do is lay there and feel those hands. And then I hear you. Just shut up. So we actually have an incredible massage therapist who comes to our house at least every other month. And we each have our own private massage with no one else in the room because she can't stand how I react to a massage.
And I can see her saying it. And
she's right. I know, but I'm like, when someone's digging into my psoas with their elbow, I'm going to go, it's just going to happen. So
I'm asleep, so I don't feel like
And this has just been wonderful, truly. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
And as someone who's married to an incredible person who's going to unfortunately be going through some of these challenges, I can't thank you enough for kind of taking up this mantle and torch and trying to make people's lives better. Imagine that.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. And thank you so much. It's such an important topic. One, which, as we discussed, is still tabooed. Stigmatized, not spoken about, and it goes hand in hand with mental health issues. And so we have two very important health issues, right, impacting women, completely and totally misunderstood at times, and very interwoven. So I really thank you for taking the time to both share your story with our audience, and also really allowing them to hear some key takeaways and just some also things that women can do in their own lives to become their best advocates. for something, which again, we need to spread the word about this. I feel like Mark and I, as men, we should start a campaign on behalf of women out there and become advocates for the upcall. I'm going to call it the menopausal cycle. I think that
there you wraps go.
It up under an umbrella.
Men
for the menopausal cycle. Yeah. Becoming more and
because
more
educated. We do. That's what we need. We need the assistance because it is, like you said, so stigmatized. Our periods are stigmatized. Oh, it's just that time. Oh, she just acts like that. And when it comes to menopause, oh, she's even crazier. So people don't understand. It's physiological. You know, it's going to happen. If we could approach it on that level, and we do need you guys to speak.
Men for menopause. And why do we forgive teens for being hormonal and crazy, but we can't forgive our moms, grandmothers, and aunties? That's bullshit. Yeah. Bullshit.
Because as we know, everything comes full cycle, right?
It does. Yes. It's all going to happen. And I cannot thank you enough. It's been
enlightening
and awesome and honestly, truly inspiring. It's making me be like, all right, I need to I need, if my wife isn't going to advocate for herself, I'm going to have to too. I'm going to have to get in there and be like, hey, just go in there. Tell them what's going on. So I cannot thank you enough. So thank you.
Welcome.
On behalf of the whole From Survivor to Thriver family, I extend it. And for my wonderful co-host, Eric DeRosa, this is Mark Fernandes, our amazing guest, Anne Bell, From Survivor to Thriver, episode 157. And I will leave us with these words, as I always do. Let's please all be as well as we can. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe to our show and leave us a review. Also, we'd love if you could share this episode with a friend and encourage you to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or email via the links in our show notes. See you next week!